Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
It's hard. It's hard to come to terms with a violent nature, hating the power it has over us.
I was raised to believe in grace, that we can be touched by the divine and transformed into a better person. So if you say to me that you're a new man, I say fine. But you should know I was also raised to believe in retribution. So if you step out of line, I will be there.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kirk.
And this is the Marvel TV Cast episode 87.
This episode, we're covering Daredevil, Born Again, season one, episode one, Heaven's Half Hour.
And just a little prelude here is we recorded one and two together. So you're going to hear in both episodes us going back and forth. We recorded for a good bit of time, so we decided to split those up. So just know that in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about episode two. So if you haven't watched episode two, spoiler alert there. I'm super excited to be talking about Daredevil. He's my favorite Marvel character.
Oh, really? And that's cool.
Yeah, and I'll get into the history of that in a second, but I what's your history with a character, Kirk? I know you're a big Marvel guy. Where do you stand with Daredevil, both the TV version of him and perhaps the comic version, or maybe the movie version?
Maybe the Ben Affleck version.
Yeah. Maybe we're Ben Affleck guys. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Have to wait. Who knows, right? Well, you know, I've been reading Daredevil since the 70s and, you know, loved the character along with, you know, all the other Marvel characters that I love. I would say he's you know, not my most loved character in the comics. I mean, it's always a faithful follower of his stuff, but you know, he's in the top 10, definitely, or top eight. You know, I always felt like Daredevil was kind of Marvel's working class Batman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Granted, he's got a superpower, whereas Batman doesn't really have superpowers, but you know, street level thugs and crime. And a lot of rooftop stuff, and it was a lot of that had a similar, especially ties to the mafia and fighting that kind of crime, as opposed to, you know, some sort of interstellar invasion. So, and that was always a nice, cool thing to change up the comic book reading. So yeah, I've been a big fan. I loved the first series, you know, all the first seasons actually of most of the Netflix shows, all except maybe Iron Fist.
Yeah.
you know, were fantastic. I thought I really enjoyed them. I can remember being so excited to see them. And then Daredevil was first, and we were traveling as a family at that point. My kids were really young. We were down in Disneyland. And I just remember, you know, getting back into the hotel and everybody be crashed, would all be burnt out. And I'd be like sitting there with my iPad in bed with headphones on watching Daredevil. I couldn't wait, you know? So, and it was really great. It was a great show. I hated to see it leave. Probably again, of the Netflix shows, the only one that, you know, all three seasons were fantastic. Some better than others, but overall fantastic.
Yeah. I was pretty lucky finding my way into Daredevil. I have read the comics since the early 80s and was lucky that I had a friend who collected Daredevil comics, because I started grabbing his, and it reminded me, I guess I was a DC guy probably before that, because I loved Batman comics, and it was the first Marvel comic that felt like Batman to me. The street levelness of it, yes, but I think it was Gotham was such a main character to Batman, and I think Hell's Kitchen became, especially in the Frank Miller run there for 2 or 3 years, Hell's Kitchen became such a character in the story, and I loved that aspect of it. I loved getting to see parts of New York City that, you know, you never really hear about as a 10-year-old kid, you know, sitting in Cleveland. So I that Miller run was fantastic, and I collected steadfastly through the 80s most of those comics. And when we got the actual Born Again run in the comic books, I was so happy about that as well. That it was like I think eight mags books that Frank Miller came back to do 2 or 3 years, like in 85, I think he came back and did like that one arc, that Born Again arc, which isn't really related to this specific, I don't think is related too much to this, other than a couple of fringy little things, but which we'll get into in a second. I was excited about the movie when they announced it. I knew that Affleck was a Batman and Daredevil fan, so I was pretty excited about that. I'll just leave it there. I was less excited after I saw it. But the Netflix shows did a really nice job putting together like several of those Frank Miller arcs into one series, where they pulled in Bullseye, they pulled in Elektra, and of course Wilson Fisk as a steady character throughout, which I thought was brilliant. And of course Bernthal as the Punisher, which I thought, after so many attempts to get Punisher right in the movies, bringing Bernthal in was pretty avant-garde, and I thought just dead on. So I'm really happy with where the series went with Netflix, and we'll get into my thoughts in the first two episodes.
I think with Daredevil, the interesting thing is that Marvel, part of what made Marvel so successful with their characters, I think, in the 60s and 70s and made them become kind of iconic, was the fact that they brought personal life to an individual character, to the secret identities of these characters, you know. So what Spider-Man was so appealing, because he was this young kid you could relate to, who was going through all these personal problems, whether it was relationships, friendships, drugs, education, you know, school, whatever, and family, his aunt, and so he always had a personal aspect and a human aspect to him, unlike a lot of comic book characters prior to that. I think Daredevil did the same thing, and that's part of why it was so appealing, but it was more an adult instead of a kid. What if, you know, if you were a real person who had a career as a lawyer, and you were had deafness, or not deafness, blindness, but, you know, and then how do you deal with that? And then your relationships with people, and how those make you more susceptible to, you know, to threats and everything else. And that just, that just wasn't done a lot in traditional comic books. And I think that's Daredevil kind of took that to another direction, or to a more older audience. And that was part of the attraction of it, I think, for me.
Yeah. I having a really a special needs like superhero. And even though he was blind, having all of his other powers enhanced. Not only was he someone who lived his life as a blind man, but also was able to overcome that using his perceived senses that are much better than normal, which is a common thing to have with somebody who's lost their hearing or lost their sight. Pretty impressive stuff. Right out of the gate, Daredevil pre-Frank Miller was about relationships and struggling relationships that he's had. Frank Miller jumped into it and put all of that on steroids with his parents, his relationship with his dad, his relationship with his mother, which was added by Miller, his relationship with Elektra and Karen Page, and of course Foggy. And we met another one in, what was her name? Heather Glenn. In the comic books, she was quite a different character, but also one that Frank Miller kind of grabbed a hold of and added a whole new nuance to, which again, if you're a DC fan, you really, aside from getting kind of smacked in the face a lot, and I love Batman, he's one of my favorite characters, but you know, it, with his parents dying, you know, and him being kind of a playboy, you get Matt Murdock dealing with all these relationships on a day-to-day basis, and all of, and the ins and the outs of that, which made it feel a lot more real than a lot of other comic books. And I agree with you. I think in a lot of ways, Spider-Man was similar. I think those New York-based comic books, I think generally just were kind of rooted more in the day-to-day that people would get attached to. And I've always been very much attached to that. And when I've come out of Daredevil and stopped reading, it's generally because they try to sensationalize a little bit or try to Avenger him a little bit.
Yeah.
And I've always liked kind of that touchstone of him being super connected to just those day-to-day problems. Yeah, I agree 100%. Just a real superhero in a lot of ways. All right. So let's get into our points. Now, normally we're going to do 5 points, but since we're going to make an attempt, we'll see how successful that is, to go through the first two episodes since they came out on the same night. We're going to, and I'm putting air quotes up here, we're going to stick to 3 points for this. I suspect since we've been missing Daredevil in a grand sense, although he's shown up in some other Disney shows, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about at some point, but we're going to try to stick to 3 points. But as Kirk and I were talking before we kick this off, it's probably going to be more than that. So we'll just see how it goes. So Kirk, let's start with you. What's your first point?
Basically, I think people were really afraid that Marvel was going to fuck up this telling of the story because of everyone. Netflix was such an iconic representation of the character and so successful, and everybody's been missing it. And we've seen them take some of these characters and lighten them up. And I think people were anticipating that after seeing him in She-Hulk, which I loved. I thought She-Hulk was a great series.
Agree.
I enjoyed it a lot. It was very much like the comic, had a lot of humor. That was the point, in my opinion. I think a lot of people just missed the point, but, you know, not everything is end game. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I had no problem with his appearance in that it was lighthearted, but that fit the tone of, if you think of it as a comic, that comic, you know what I mean? So anyway, but I think clearly and there was a lot of, and who knows what the truth is, but there was a lot of rumor about how the show was developing and the characters that were going to be brought over. And in the beginning, it was just going to be Fisk and Charlie Cox and D'Onofrio. And so people were starting to get worried right away. And, but I guess, you know, after the writer's strike and COVID and everything, I guess Kevin Feige got more personally involved is the rumor, and spent a lot more time retooling. And they basically had shot the whole thing and they went back and redid the whole thing and brought back a lot of the key people from the original series. So overall, I think, you know, they did an excellent job of lining up with what had been before. And I think people are going to be real happy with that.
I was actually surprised at how connective it felt.
I was one of those people that was worried even after, you know, when you hear you're redoing a whole entire show.
Yeah.
Although I have seen a bunch of interviews.
It doesn't instill confidence.
Yeah. You know, and Marvel is, you know, it's been up and down in like tail end of phase 4 and phase 5. And
yeah,
I think that, you know, heading into a show and, you know, I recently did Agatha All Along, which I thought was fabulous, but the TV shows have been kind of up and down, to different extent. And while I've liked most of them, I you never know where it's going to go when you have to reshoot everything. And the one saving grace for me heading into this was the fact that Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio very much were on board and were very complimentary of what they redid, and were super content with the characters that they brought back from the original Netflix show. And I think that was my saving grace. I watched one interview, it was a 4-minute interview, and there was a lot of joy in that interview. So that was my one saving grace heading into this. And I think after watching the first two shows, I agree with you, that tone is most definitively there.
Yeah. Well, that was that was actually one of my 3 points. So I'll just go start with that, is that, you know, I think the smartest thing they did was bring those characters back. You know, comic books and their characters and stories are sequential and continuing. And and that's really with reoccurring characters and relationships, you know, almost like a soap opera, and with fights.
Yeah.
And, you know, a reader becomes invested in the world and the story, the characters, the whole narrative. And it's part of what makes collecting comics and following comics so great. And the idea that they weren't going to, well, I think rather than focus on the fact that they understood that at some point and went and tied in, brought in all those, you know, the Punisher and Karen and Foggy, and brought them back and continued the storyline for the most part from that original. It really made this new series feel consistent, and that as if you were picking up the newest issue of the comic, you know, for me.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you were going to continue on with the next chapter, the next story of these characters that you love, with the relationships that you love, in the world and the environment that you love. And, you know, that I think that was quintessential. And I think it's going to make this particular series very successful.
I couldn't agree. My it's funny. This is not a planned segue into my first point, but I'm just going to throw it out there. My first point was relationships, the relationships which are key to the comic and have been key to the series. And I couldn't imagine what the series looks like without those relationships. And while obviously episode 1 sends us in a certain direction with regards to those relationships, not including the main relationships from that Netflix show, while including Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio as the same characters, would have been, I think, a tremendous mistake. Yeah. But the relationships in the comic books have always been, you know, obviously Murdoch and Fisk, Kingpin and Daredevil. But that Matt Murdock, Karen Page, Foggy relationship is such an undercore to the comic that not including that would have been a letdown to the bulk of fans who love those Netflix shows.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And the three of them together, the tonal joy that I had watching the first 5 minutes where the three of them are strolling down Hell's Kitchen, making fun of the fact that it's changing, and the scene of them walking down the street kind of laughing with each other, that made me, I mean, obviously they were kind of yanking us around, but that made me very content. Like immediately yeah. was content and happy to see these three together once again. The relationship that they have with Hell's Kitchen and of course having Josie's Diner there, which is such a major part of the comic.
Yeah.
The relationship between Matt and Foggy, the relationship between Karen and Foggy and Matt and Karen. And they're all so different, as set up by that initial Netflix show. And then to incorporate Bullseye into that, who is a tremendous character in the comics, is introduced by Frank Miller.
and then introducing new characters, which is a point in episode two that I want to get to. But I just love the interrelationship with these characters, and then initially with Hell's Kitchen, and then really for the rest of the first two episodes, at the very least, an avoidance of Hell's Kitchen for obviously reasons. But I'm sure we'll get to that point in a minute. But
yeah,
if I had
to do any crit of that, of this particular topic or aspect of it that we're talking about, it would just be that there wasn't almost not enough. I mean, of you know, they turn around and Karen leaves. I know she's coming back. My understanding is she's going to be in two more episodes. But
yeah.
And then of course, what happens to Foggy? You know, so.
Well, and this gets to really the root of my curiosity about the original script versus what they changed, and perhaps more of that original storyline is part of this, because I have to imagine that the Kingpin, the Wilson Fisk running for mayor and Matt Murdock's lawyer side, I have to imagine that was probably part of the original idea. The idea of incorporating these characters at the beginning, sort of it becoming the fulcrum of the rest of the season. I love that idea. Hmm. And if that's the tonal change that sends the rest of the series down a different place, I love that. I am concerned about them not being in it, but they did a nice job of bridging those three characters into some new characters, which again, I think we'll talk about as we progress today. I think they did an okay job. I agree. Mm-hmm. They didn't do a great job. It was too, I mean, we only really got, you know, 30 minutes of any type of relationship there at the beginning, but.
Well, the key to the importance of that, those three together, that relationship of the, that dynamic of those three, is that they give the balance to Matt. You know what I mean? They help rein him in, and they support him when he's got to go do the unthinkable, and they kind of give him strength, and yet also give him some self-control. And without them, you know, that's obviously epitomized in this episode with the opening sequence where, you know, without Foggy, he jumps the line, you know what I mean? Immediately.
It's funny how fast it goes from that happy tone where you can tell.
Yeah.
And if it's spoilers, if you haven't seen the Netflix shows, go back and watch them. But, you know, if you haven't, you might want to pause here for a second. But that whole story arc where they find out that Matt is Daredevil and leave him essentially because they are really angry at the fact that he didn't trust them enough to tell them who he actually was.
Right.
That whole arc and that whole them coming back together, and you can see now years later, they have their storefront again. They are working together again. They are happy again and very balanced. And to have that, you know, 9 minutes into the show, to have that completely uprooted gives you a great sense of where this episode or where the series is going to go, at least for the first 9 episodes. All right. I think we knocked out point one.
Yep.
which kind of dips into lots of my points. Let's hit you with what sounded like you were about to start with a different point. So if I segue,
yeah, I was initially going to start with,
go ahead with your point too. Yeah,
sure. Basically this one, I had a bunch of rambling notes and bullet points, and I was able to combine them into basically one concept, which is that just the look and feel of the show, I think, you know, was.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Was such a win for me. The city felt great. It clearly was just fully shot on location. The people, the environments, you know, you felt the city. You know, there was no backlit set feeling to any of those shots. Absolutely none of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even alleys and stuff were clearly on set, you know, were there on location. I love that about that. You know, as much as Batman, excuse me, as much as Batman is, forever linked to Gotham, you know, Daredevil is linked to Hell's Kitchen. And so it was a beautiful tribute to that. And I loved that aspect of it. Some great use of camera shots too, and lighting, really bringing in the kind of the comic book feel. Love the shot of Matt standing, looking up, and half his face is washed and red. Lots of stuff like that. It's very, very comic book-esque.
And that point too brought me back to those Netflix shows, because the Netflix shows so much dealt with, especially when they were in the Defenders, you could get a sense of the theme of who the episode arc was about based on the colors that they were showing. And I love that scene because you had Matt Murdock very much standing on the ground, washed in that red color. And then they show Wilson Fisk standing at the top of a building, very much washed in white. And I loved the juxtaposition of they sort of stayed away from that. I agree with you. They made a very good point in just showing the city the way it was, almost until that moment where we got a sense of who these characters really are just based on the color.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the pacing was good. The new firm partner and he have a great chemistry. Which is impressive considering that we met her for the very first time in the first few minutes of the episode. That was great. I felt that this, for me, for some reason, and I don't know if it's because of the action sequences or like I was saying, the way they photograph certain shots, the whole thing felt a little bit more comic book like than Netflix. The Netflix show felt much more like a crime noir movie, and this felt like the Matt, you know, the Daredevil comic book brought to life, is how I felt. And I thought that I really liked that a lot. It walked right off the page, basically onto the screen. Things like the upside down shot of Kingpin eating, you know, his little meager breakfast, speaking to how his, you know, upside down his world is now compared to what it was. And I suspect the series, as it progresses, he'll fall backwards, obviously, his old ways. You know, my guess is we'll see the white suit. He'll gain a lot of that weight back and, go full Kingpin. And maybe we'll get a shot that's straight on instead of upside down with him with a big, huge plate of food in the white suit. The bullseye glove, you know, I think one of the complaints from the original series was that Bullseye didn't have his Bullseye costume. And he has a costume here, but it's more kind of like the early Spider-Man handmade, kind of ski mask type of thing, which makes sense because he's evolving. But you get that opening shot of him reaching with the glove and you see the Bullseye symbol on the glove. Very cool.
Someone who had no idea he was going to be in this series at all, a real pleasant surprise. Because
didn't know that.
I had no idea. No.
Oh my gosh.
I stayed out of it as much as I possibly could. And when I watch trailers, this is going to sound silly, but I never look at them straight on. I'm always like looking out a window or something when they're playing, so I can avoid some of the things, some of the sites that are being shown, because quite often they'll show a spoiler and I'll hear what's happening but not quite know what it is. So I had no clue. One of the things I enjoyed the most about the third season was that character. I love that character, and having him come back was absolutely a pleasant surprise, because again, the comic book arc, you know, Frank Miller introduced that character and it ended sort of on a cliffhanger. And if they never brought Daredevil back and that's how it ended, I would have been very upset by that. So I'm glad to see him come back. But
yeah,
anyway, yeah, it was, it, I liked, and it was subtle, right? They didn't smack us in the face with, you know,
well, they've gotten, I think, over the years now of doing these movies and TV shows, they've gotten wise to the idea that there has to be an evolution in mm-hmm. the look and feel of the villains and the characters and the superheroes. I apologize for my voice. You know, this is like the next evolution. You know, I assume that either by the end of the series or in the next season, you know, that he'll be full on costumed, you know, and that's cool. But also the way they executed his skills, you know,
yeah.
they did a pretty good job in that in the original Netflix show, but this one just takes it to the next level.
Oh. You know,
that initial battle with the knives and everything he's grabbing and throwing and bouncing things off of walls and redirecting things and taking people out, you know,
yeah,
incredible. And just the overall, you know, treatment of his threat was awesome. The fight in the bar, the stairs, the rooftop. I hope we get the, like in the Netflix series, always this third season was a really cool one shot fight, usually in a hallway.
Yeah.
And you know, we kind of got it right off the bat. So I don't know if that's going to be it for the season, but I hope they continue to do something special in the third episode.
I don't know about you, but that felt very much like an homage in a sense. And also that is smart direction, smart show running, smart producing to put something. I mean, that fight scene started 9 minutes into the episode.
Right.
And for anybody who is slightly concerned
that
this show wasn't going to go dark.
Right.
The only darker place you could, I don't know. I don't know that there was a darker place you could go.
Well, maybe if you threw somebody off of a subway platform and had them splatter on a train, if you did that, it'd be a little darker.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Jumping ahead a little.
Yeah. But I, well,
they upped it.
When I watched that scene back and really started paying attention to the amount of times Bullseye was throwing knives, and then you don't really understand that they are not only hitting Daredevil, but they're sticking into it, not his back, although there's a couple there too.
Yeah,
but he's got, I forget, I had a count, I think 12, 8, 9, 9 knives, I think he had, like, into it.
Yeah.
It literally sticking out of his chest and his stomach and his legs. Yeah. And the thing about the comic that I've always enjoyed that I think Netflix got right, and now you can definitively see that Disney Plus is going to get right, is they took a glee, the comics, the Netflix show, and now this Disney show, in finding ways for Daredevil and Matt Murdock to just get the shit kicked out of him, because he would always rebound within him getting his ass kicked by kicking that much or more. This fight with Bullseye at the beginning was a great homage to that. And I think,
yeah,
really calmed my senses. And we can talk about how they shot it. I enjoyed that it was a one shot. Like you, I hope we get their version of that later.
Yeah,
because I wasn't super crazy about some of the aspects of this one, but that's a nitpick. I mean, I loved it. I just, there were parts about it I couldn't see it, and it was bugging me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With the fog and the smoke the smoke bomb he puts into it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Well, I think some of that is to try and cover the CGI.
Sure, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And there's definitely more. You know, and that's something they're going to have to be careful of. I talk about it in another part here, but
yeah,
you know, the CGI allows them to recreate some things that the Netflix show didn't or couldn't do, and that he does in the comics. But you have to be careful, because at some point you leave that realistic, earthy, down, you know, in the dirt kind of realism that the show is so renowned for. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, they're going to have to be careful on that, I think. And I think your parts of that fight scene speak to that.
The roof scenes prior to the fight, where the Netflix show would have definitively used just stuntmen.
Yeah.
There was some CGI to that. Thankfully, things changed quickly after that, but I was really concerned as he was leaping from building to building, where you could see the CGI piece to that, where I thought they probably didn't need to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
But I do agree with you. And even the
swinging with the billy club. I mean, they made the billy club become so much more like almost he had a Spider-Man feel to him swinging. And even in the comic, Daredevil swinging on his baton thing does mm-hmm. not look like Spider-Man. He's not drawn that way.
Even remotely. Yeah.
Yeah. They careful on that.
Yeah, I think because Miller's initial like foray was doing Spider-Man comics, I think is kind of a backup writer. And he very pointedly, I've seen interviews where he's talked specifically about his goal with Daredevil was to have them rooted in a similar fashion as far as but specifically from their parts of New York City. And Daredevil's way of traveling was, he described as being brutal. Mm-hmm. And they almost made it a little too pretty there at the beginning. So, I mean, I didn't hate it. I just, they just, like you said, there's a carefulness to that.
Well, it just
that
takes you out of it a little bit sometimes. It can, if they're not careful.
If both you and I thought the same, because there was one moment where he jumped off and the baton string shot out. And I immediately went, oh shit, Spider-Man. I literally said it out loud, and I thought,
well, like when he lands on the roof after Bullseye comes out, and he like takes the pose, like he looked like freaking Tom Holland Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's just not Daredevil. But so the last point in terms of this look and feel, the hearing, the way that they represented the little differently than the Netflix show. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was a combination of visual and sound cues where the world kind of goes a little fuzzy. And then we zoom in on the thing that he's hearing, his head cock. There's the way the lights were reflecting a circle, you know, almost like a dot on his ear. It was very well thought out. It was really artfully done. And it really gave us a great way to understand that power that he has. And they did that throughout the episode both episodes a little bit, where he could zone in. And then of course, listening to Foggy's heartbeat through that whole fight scene.
Oh gosh.
Becoming more desperate and more out of control as it slows and he's realizing he's dying.
The juxtaposition of that fight scene with how he was reacting to him listening to Foggy's heartbeat it was brilliant. Now that you mention this, in having the senses be such a major part of who Daredevil is, the Netflix shows did this, don't get me wrong, but in the first two episodes, especially after this fight scene, like you mentioned in the court scene, in several parts of the second episode, which we'll get to when we talk about it, it's not subtle because it's obviously his superpower, but they handle it differently than the Netflix show. Like you mentioned, they have him zeroing in and it becomes an actual superpower to Matt Murdock because he uses it for different things, and it became such a focal point of those moments, but not something that seemed more than the acting, not something that seemed more than Daredevil being Daredevil in the fight scenes. It was subtly playing in the background. We'll get to episode two where it becomes really, my second viewing of the second episode, there was a gleeful part of me was like, oh my gosh, this is as much of the comic as I've ever felt I've been in.
Watching
it on the screen. But they found a way, and this is where Disney the power of Disney, the money of Disney can if they can find the right tone, which they did so well in the first few phases of the MCU, they find the right tone, they can do things that the Netflix show couldn't. And this was one of them. I agree with you. That court scene was riveting. Because you didn't really know where it was going to go. It was kind of interesting seeing Bullseye standing there after he'd gotten thrown off the building. But
One thing they didn't do there as a crib was this, and they at the final scene in the last episode of the third season on Netflix was his going on being operated on his back.
Yeah.
And the doctor's name is mentioned. The one doctor says to the other doctor, calls him by his name. I can't remember his name. It's a Japanese name, I think. Yeah. But it's a name of a doctor that's from the comics.
Right.
Who is in the comics was responsible for creating Adamantium.
Yes.
That is then put into Wolverine.
Right.
So the implication was that that's what was being put into his back.
He was being
juiced basically with Adamantium in his spine.
In that same discussion, so at the time this was filmed, in the third season of Netflix, I do not believe they had Fox yet, or they had just gotten it.
No, yeah, they didn't. Yeah, it wasn't.
So they didn't use. They didn't say. They said cogmium instead of adamantium.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that.
Yeah. So I was intrigued with the fight scene and that the scene that you mentioned when they were talking about that doctor, the adamantium. Were they going to try to make that change? Because obviously they wanted to use adamantium, but couldn't. So were they going to make that change? And I was very curious to see if Bullseye was enhanced in some way,
Well, they didn't point it out, though, and they didn't explain it. I think that was a miss, you know?
Yes,
I
mean, how
do you, how do you go off the roof like that and not and be able to walk away, let alone just to live?
Right.
Not walk away, but, you know, survive. And
well, and this is where I feel like his character, and you may know more about this than me at this point, but this is where I feel like his character is far from being finished in the series.
Yeah.
I suspect that he's going to be around, and we're going to find out a little bit more, and how they handle his relationship with Fisk will be interesting in and of itself, being that Fisk was the one who
broke his back. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that the avenues of what they do with this character, who's sort of working on his own against the two main characters, should be fun if reintroduce that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to spin off on your points.
No. That was good.
My third point was the tone of the series, and I talked about the scenes and how they changed throughout, and the juxtaposition of the city versus the courtroom versus Vanessa versus kind of figuring out the relationship that Nessa has with Fisk, and where Fisk is currently after. You know, and I'm in a weird place with him, because we've gotten some different versions of him, and I believe he did he show up in Hawkeye? Is Hawkeye where he showed up in? He showed up before.
Fisk? Yeah. Yeah. Hawkeye.
Yeah. Hawkeye, the sort of different Disney versions that we got of him in Hawkeye, and then in Echo.
Right.
To now. And you sort of start to see, okay, we can kind of see where this went from him being broken to sort of weaving his way back to New York for this mayoral run, and his relationship with Vanessa, which was so key to season one and season three. The tonal changes that they did, and they felt at first off-putting to me. I was like, oh, ooh.
Yeah,
oh.
I had a hard time with the Vanessa Fisk divide. I struggled with understanding what that was about, why it was happening. I don't think that they did. I don't think they did a great job of making that clear. But clearly, you know, she felt deserted by him when he went off to heal, and then ran his business better than he did. and now is kind of like, you know, threatened probably a little bit with his return.
Sure.
So, you know, I, and then took a had a freaking affair.
we think, right? With Adam.
Well, yeah, with Adam, whoever that is. But, you know, how long before Adam dies? How long do you think it's going to be before Fisk decides to take him off the playing field?
Yeah, well, and who knows? I mean, we'll talk about episode two in a second, but maybe it won't be Fisk that does it. I don't know. I got lots of thoughts about Adam.
We didn't meet Adam, did we?
No.
Well, we may have and not known it. Maybe it was in the room.
You know, I want to. Well, we'll get to episode two. There's a character in episode two that I didn't get that I think might be Adam, but we'll have to wait and see.
Right.
We'll have to
wait. The book signing for Dr. Yes. Heather Glenn's, was that in the first episode?
I think it was in the second episode. That was in the second episode. Yeah. Okay. Because there was someone at the book signing that we'll talk about in episode two.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, my second point was exactly, well, in the same vein of yours, was the tone and the tone of Hell's Kitchen and the tone of the city. And I thought I really struggled with, again, spoilers from the Netflix series, with Ben Urich being killed, because he's such a main part of the comic series. And I love that character. And they had the right actor for that character.
Yeah.
I really loved the idea of his niece being a part of this series now, because you still have that Urich connection. And it'll be curious to see. And I'm not going to give any spoilers, because the niece is a new character, but there was a nephew in the comics. And we're not going to do like a comic section, so I'm not going to talk about that nephew as of yet. But the moving kind of the Urich from a traditional newspaper to the social media journalist who's just as tenacious. Those interviews that she did seemed so real, to the point where I had to try to figure out if they were real. I almost felt like they weren't. but I really liked that. And I think probably the thing that I struggled with the most, and maybe this is part of where the direction is going, is that we weren't really in Hell's Kitchen for a lot of these first two episodes, other than that first like segment. We were just in New York City.
Yeah.
But as we got in this first episode, that meeting, the heat meeting between Fisk and Murdoch, when they were almost friendly to each other.
The diner. Yeah.
Yeah. Where they both talked about how they left the kitchen and how they wanted to get out of the kitchen and Hell's Kitchen, that is. And so after I watched these a second time, I started to understand, okay, this is where we are right now with these characters. We're not in Hell's Kitchen anymore. We're in New York City proper. And, you know, they made a point of showing Times Square quite often as throughout the mayoral run. And so I'm okay with that now.
The diner scene was that episode one or was that episode two?
That was episode one.
Yeah. Okay.
That was episode one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It actually isn't. I was going to talk a little bit about that in point one, but we can get to that in a second. But I felt like that conversation, while I felt it was a bit contrived, I did like it. It did like set the tone for me about my third point, which we'll get to in a second. But I the tone that they set with the city, I loved. The direction at the end of it with the color, the opposing colors of where the show's likely going to be going. I was happy with that too. But I will say this, and we'll talk more about this in episode two. I don't want to spend six episodes waiting for these two to be who they really are. We've done that in other seasons.
Yeah.
We got that first dose of Daredevil. We haven't gotten Kingpin yet, per se, although in episode two, we see some Knuckle stuff. We'll get to that. I just, I don't. Tone-wise, I'm good with the trial stuff, and I'm good with the fact that they're not giving us I'm a hero exposition like they did too much of, I think, in the Netflix series. The conversations seem a little more authentic to me.
Yeah.
I don't want to be pissing around from episode to episode going, when's he going to get his... When are we going to get that new Daredevil look? When are we going to... Let's get going now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. You know, I have some cons from the first episode. And well, the first one was, I think I'm tired of the D.D. Kingpin story.
Yeah. Well, that... Yeah. So,
I mean, it's basically four seasons of it. Hopefully they're going to, the Muse character, which we got the mural in the first episode. And then we got his, I think it was him. Getting the signature from the doctor. Yeah. But we'll talk about that in the next episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that, you know, that he, that character will be the ultimate big bad that this is really, this season is really about. And the Kingpin Daredevil story will just be kind of circling around the outside, which is consistent with how it's in the book. You know, it's and I think it's strong.
My favorite parts of their relationship at this point, having read the comic book for 40 years, has been they've gotten to a point more or less where they just deal with each other. They know they're out there.
Yeah.
They even have moments of, in very similar ways as Joker and Batman, they have kind of a kinship to each other. Like they're
well,
they're
that
brothers.
That diner sequence really, I mean, did a great job of defining that, you know, I mean, essentially like he says to him, you know, it's not unpleasant to see you again.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah,
so much.
I do too.
And I love the way that Vincent D'Onofrio delivered that, because there was a hesitancy to it. And you could tell it pained him to say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in juxtaposition with the fact that the whole point of his side of that meeting was to say, "I'm getting rid of vigilantes." So,
right.
But
I think that, you know, they realize at this point, after all of this, that they're actually very similar people.
Yeah,
they've got some split personality issues. Mm-hmm. That they both see themselves as heroes.
Yeah.
That they both are trying to do what they think is best for their city.
Yep.
They're just on different sides of the track.
Well,
how to do that.
Sure. The core of these characters, again, going back to those relationships that we talked about, are parental, you know, struggles. You know, we had a mom who disappeared.
Right.
From Matt Murdock's life, and a dad who...
Yeah, childhood trauma.
Yeah, and then you look at the juxtaposition of Fisk's character, who had, you know, his father beat on his mother and beat on him, and who he eventually killed. Their stories aren't that different. It's just that fine line of what happens when one of those... When you veer a little to the right or veer a little to the left. The father at the end of... Matt Murdock's father at the end of the day... did the best that he could to care for him, even though he was a street level thug himself.
Yeah.
Whereas Fisk's dad didn't complete. Well, opposite.
And also Matt had the church, and he had,
had
the father.
Faith.
Yeah. And
where, and ultimately his mother, as we saw in the Netflix series and the comic book, where Maggie was part of his life as well.
Yeah. So he had a little bit more consistency, or at least positivity and support, you know, whereas Kingpin didn't have that.
Didn't have any of that.
But D'Onofrio is just amazing.
Oh.
I mean, as an actor, he is just amazing. His delivery, the hand quakes and nervous finger movement, he just embodies that character so well.
Yeah.
I think
he's
fantastic.
The stuttering of the speech, the stunnedness of it, which honestly I've had friends tell me puts him off to them. And it's shocking to hear that, because
I know, right?
I love that part about him, there's a part of Wilson Fisk that is trying to be proper and trying to portray himself as being almost royalty, and he does it very performatively, and in the way that D'Onofrio does that, with the way he talks and the things that he takes joy in, which aren't real joy, is and it's all subtle, all of it's subtle, that you have to watch and you have to kind of encapsulate. You mentioned the weight loss, which is obvious, and the fact that he's eating lighter, and the fact that he went from having a room full of clothing to a closet full of suits, where You see him pause as he looks at that white suit and before he grabs the gray suit. There's a subtleness to it, to the way that he portrays himself, that is just phenomenal. And seeing D'Onofrio talk about these characters, and there's a joy that he has in learning about them. He is one of the few actors that fully encapsulates himself into the universe, where he talks to fans constantly. He reminds me very much of Jon Favreau when he took Iron Man on and literally sort of lived with the people. D'Onofrio takes that to heart, and you can see it in this character, the nuance of this character, who's especially this season trying very much to be a mayor without being falling back to I don't know about that, we'll talk, but I want to wait for that
he's trying.
So I can't wait for the moment where he stops, then I'll stop there. But to be fair, when I first saw that scene, I couldn't help but compare it to Heat when De Niro and Pacino were sitting across from each other. But I very quickly was happy with where it went. And I can't help but think that we get that in episode one. We're going to be bookended in episode, maybe it's episode 9, maybe it's episode 17, at the end of the series, at the end of season one or season two now.
I love too how it implied, you know, that these guys are, you know, lots of times in Batman, they go into the idea that, you know, Batman is who is really the person and Bruce Wayne is the costume.
Yeah.
And that felt very much in this, especially in this first scene, season, this first episode, because they do a good job of kind of juxtaposing, to use your word, Kingpin and Matt's days and how they get dressed, and they're you know, and they're going in and taking the suits out, and he chooses the gray suit instead of the white suit, but clearly he has an affection for the white suit, like you said, and you know, because and then their discussion is kind of circling around at the diner, it's kind of circling around the fact that they both have this other side, that this darker side, and he even calls it out. Kingpin does, and that they're getting pressure constantly internally from that side.
Yeah.
Who's like, let me fucking out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And, well,
I never, you always see it so much with Kingpin. I'm just thinking about the point they take in showing Matt Cook, the point they take in making to showing him in his apartment. I never saw that parallel until you just mentioned it, which is silly because it's so obvious. And the way that they pattern their days to keep them from being out of control in their own ways with their alter egos. Wow.
Yeah, they're just boiling underneath. You know what I mean? And they both are trying to keep the other in line. They want them. It's almost as if they kind of are trying to help each other. You stay in line and then I can stay in line. I'll stay in line. You stay in line. You know what I mean? It's like.
Yeah. Well, so here's my question then. Now that you're bringing all of this up and you mentioned Muse, which is obviously a big bad that's going to come, and we talked about Bullseye as well. Since the initial take on Daredevil was going to be an 18-episode first season, and they've since decided that it's going to be 9-episode first season, an 8-episode second season.
Right.
Are we going to see Daredevil and Kingpin, or Matt Murdock and Wilson Fisk, working together this season?
I think it's possible. I think it's possible, because I think this Muse character, and again, we'll get into maybe more in the next discussion of the next episode, but you know, he is a bigger threat. He is a darker threat, and they're now both in positions of authority to deal with it. And they're going to need each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Well, that does to me make it sound like they definitely have a path for season one and definitely have a path for season two, because if Muse is only a season one character, I can now see probably where we're going to go with season two.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well,
the only other quick point on the diner sequence is when they talk about the death of Foggy, and Kingpin apologizes or says he's sorry, and then reaffirms, I had nothing to do with that. I have kept our promise. And that promise was such a key part of the finale of season three. Mm-hmm. And it was good that they brought that back and that they clarified that. You know, I thought they did a good job of doing that throughout the first two episodes of, you know, tying up and connecting some of those storylines. So
for sure.
From the original. Yeah. Sorry. Moving
on. No. I mean, we've nailed all three of my points, and I think that my third point was just the show direction and where we're going. And I've been trying to use those first two episodes as a way to figure out what the dance was going to be between Kingpin and Daredevil. And as you mentioned, I think that getting away, it's so easy for Batman to tell a Joker story, but the best stories always tend to be when you get away from Joker for a while. And you create these new characters.
And well, it makes the Joker story better.
Yeah, because usually then when you come back, when you have a writer or you have a director or you have a showrunner who is dealing with kind of a foundational build of our hero or our heroes in this case, where you see how important life is without necessarily having them battle their biggest counterpart. Then when that counterpart becomes a part of their battle, it gives it that more richness to it. And, you know, having, it would have been fun. Well,
and it's also always entertaining to see enemies join forces, to see a bad guy become a good guy or a good guy fall and become a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think of Buffy and Angel and Spike and all, you know what I mean? There's just, those are evolutions of character that are just iconic and powerful. So,
You
know, and I think you may have a great point or a great observation that maybe they will team up this and could be why they're going to such lengths to show us how they're so similar and how they're both, you know, because it doesn't seem like they're necessarily holding down that darker side against each other. More, it's just an internal struggle that they're trying to keep under control. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think
they kind of find a common ground there.
Murdoch wasn't fazed by the vigilante stuff because
he's not right now.
But the fact that he stayed out of the mayoral run, the fact that he stayed out of trying to keep the city from voting for him or against him for that matter, and he just sort of watched. Almost knowing the inevitable. The show is most certainly paralleling real life to an extent, which I really love.
Yeah,
because, you know, leadership, there is always kind of a balance between good and bad. And I think that, you know, the things that we see, if we didn't know anything about Kingpin, if we didn't see that Netflix series and we don't know anything about the comic and you watch him throughout this, it's kind of an interesting take. You know, you see him wanting to do the right thing and you see his wife sort of in charge of a bad element, which we don't really understand yet as well. But we'll get into that in the episode too. But I think that the dance that we're playing right now as a continuation of the Netflix shows and as a creation of Born Again as a new show that the showrunner wants to go for multiple seasons, I think we are in an interesting place where in two seasons, I hope we get kind of a bow tied on this and we get to see Daredevil kind of spring off into some other things, but for another day.
Yep.
But those are my points. I've got some notes, unless you got some more points.
No, I'm good. I mean, I love the opening credits, but I wish they had kept the original song.
Well, here's what I'll say
it's the same song, but it's a variation of it. It's a mix of it. It's a,
So the people who have taken that song on are the Newton brothers. And I don't hate that. The first song was so iconic to me, but you can see with the opening credits that they're the bright reds of the original series. They're showing, it's a grayer, a darker version of that with things crumbling and being built back up as opposed to the kind of the blood dripping in the first one. But the Newton brothers are connected to
Mike Flanagan. They did all of the Mike Flanagan shows, Fall of the House of Usher and Midnight Mass and Midnight Club. And I really loved the music. They did a nice job in the first couple of episodes, I think, of incorporating music to really build tension.
Yeah, I thought the music was handled well.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the fact that they changed the intro.
Yeah, well, you know, Disney's got to be Disney, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I love that we got a small taste of White Tiger in episode one.
Yeah.
Not, again, me going in completely blind to a point. I saw an article, oh boy, it must have been over a year ago now, when the character who played White Tiger passed away.
Yeah.
They made a note when he passed away of saying he was going to be in this season. So I knew we were going to get a White Tiger. I just didn't realize it was going to be an important character. And I didn't realize in episode one it was going to be an important character. I just kind of chalked it into the back of my mind that he would be showing up. Just didn't realize they were going to smack us in the face in episode two. I do love the incorporations of some of the new characters. I'll talk more about them later, but we got Kirsten McDuffie at the beginning of episode one as an ADA talking to Foggy, not Matt, which I love, because in episode two we see she did what she said she was going to do, only it was with Matt because of what happened in episode one. And we got a small sample taste of a character that I think I'm in love with right now, and that's Daniel Blake. I'm going to talk about him more in episode two, but that's Michael Gandolfini, James Gandolfini's son.
Yeah, yeah.
As this kind of upstart with Fisk, and I can't quite figure him out yet, which I think is the point. Well, we have a few, so I really like the new characters that are incorporated, but they become such focal points in episode two that I'm going to hold off on talking about them until then. So those are my notes. Red Hook. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but Red Hook is something that we see in the comics that's mentioned a few times, specific to something that Nessa is working on that I think we're going to get to see. And then the time jump. We have a Walking Dead time jump where we start off and we end up a year later. So, which I think they handled very well. Although it was initially for me, I was like, whoa, okay.
The idea of Foggy being gone though is just painful. And I wonder, do you think that's forever? Do you think that's, it seems like there's no going back.
there's no fucking way they fucking better not have killed Foggy off forever. I'll be fucking pissed. Like,
how do you really feel about it? Seems like a gray area with you.
Well, I'm watching these fucking interviews and he's fucking sitting there like he's there for like, and I'm like, so how do you feel about being in the new series? He's like, oh, it's great. I'm like, fuck you. Sorry.
Well, you know, I've seen some people do some, reviews of the episode, and some of the things they point out is that they spend an inordinate amount of time showing him die. Mm-hmm. They constantly go back to him. They constantly show close up. They really want to make sure that we know that he's dead.
Yeah.
And almost too much. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, okay.
And I think going back to some of the first points I was making in the very beginning was that, you know, the value to the story of those two characters to him is quintessential. I mean, they help keep him on track there. And this series has established that as well, that, you know, that it's really the story of the three of them and their relationships to each other and how they work together and everything else. And yes, they get broken apart, but then they come back together. And, they needed to have something very, very significant to explain why he would step away from being DD.
Sure.
So I understand that, but it's not unlike comics to have him come back.
Well, the subtleness to the beginning of episode one, where we have Foggy talking specifically about Benny, about something that's going on, obviously Bullseye's tied into it. Our assumption is this is a revenge kill. it's not coming from Kingpin.
Well, the question, which, no, it's not coming from Kingpin, but it is questionable as to whether or not he's going after Karen.
Well, not going Foggy. After Karen.
Although he went to Foggy's house, so that kind of seems like.
Well, so remember, Vanessa's running the business.
Right.
So what Kingpin does doesn't necessarily mean that Vanessa's not part of it. And
no, that's interesting. That's an interesting take.
So I think that, you know, we'll get into episode two and where that goes. But I think that Vanessa's entanglements into this are going to be, they developed her very interestingly in the Netflix series to become sort of this someone who is very accepting of the evil and has created a very business-like way to incorporate mob justice and running the families of New York.
Well, she's clearly, even from back in the Netflix series, drawn to the power.
Yeah, yeah.
She's attracted to his power. And, now she's gained his power.
Sure.
Herself.
So trying to figure out what Foggy was up to with regards to Benny, even though that was clearly a setup. And then maybe realizing that Bullseye's coming back into the series at some point and us finding out information about what he really was doing is probably something that's going to be on the back burner this whole entire series. I mean, the season specifically, like my thought process is that whatever the Muse angle is going to be at the tail end of this season one, we're going to get a taste of perhaps what Bullseye was really up to. I'll just put it to you this way. I don't think it was strictly revenge, because if it was, wouldn't his revenge be more towards Fisk than?
Yeah.
So I we'll have to wait and see. I just think there's a lot of fun.
Well, maybe I could see this angle being taken, and it was great on your part, the idea that Vanessa is tied in with this, but if she wanted to bring down Fisk, and she was there when the promise was made.
Yeah.
So if she sends Bullseye, right, to kill one of his friends, he's going to assume it's Fisk and come after him. And then that solves her problem.
Oh boy.
Yeah. That would be cool. Maybe what we're going to get for Foggy is a flashback.
Yeah.
Episode, well, where we see, you know, what, how that all unfolded but I can't think of any way that they could bring him back, except maybe this amulet thing that White Tiger wears.
So we have some stuff at play here. Plus, I believe Daredevil's going to be a bigger part of the MCU heading in. So, you know,
he's supposed to be part of, I don't know if it's Doomsday or Secret Wars or both.
Okay. We're going to get him as an Avenger. Okay.
Yeah.
I always, that's a fine line for me too. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah.
Although I will say that Daredevil did play a part in the original Secret Wars. He was still on Earth. He wasn't part of the bigger.
Well, they
picture,
may do so. That. You know what I mean? They may do that with all of the Defenders type characters.
Who's going to hold down the fort on Earth while everybody else is gone?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. All right, Daredevil News. Listen, I've got a name for the news because this actually was going to be the name for the podcast. That's right. We're here for Hell's Kitchen Confidential. Man, I was so happy with that name. And then
makes
I remembered.
Makes me hungry.
Rest in peace, Anthony Bourdain. All right.
Yes.
I have two bits of news. The links will be in the show notes. Both were from Entertainment Weekly and are mild spoilers in that they started filming season two. It doesn't give any characters away. It doesn't give any potential series away or anything like that. But the first article was just the showrunner talking about how season two was really an extension of season one, going back to when this was originally supposed to be an 18 episode first season. And in that article, one of the producers mentioned the fact that the crew that is making Daredevil has been talking about how much they want to do with a lot of the other street level Netflix characters. And they mentioned, of course, all of the characters, and were specific in mentioning the character, the actors that portray them. They mentioned Kristen Ritter, who, of course, played Jessica Jones, Mike Coulter, who played Luke Cage, and Finn Jones as Iron Fist. And I prior to talking to you, Kirk, I didn't know that there had been talk about other characters being brought into this, aside from the ones that are connected to Daredevil, Born Again. But you had mentioned that Kristen Ritter has been alluding to possibly being Jessica Jones again.
Yeah, she's supposed to be in the second season. All the reports that she's supposedly filming now. And I've also heard Mike Coulter might show up as well.
Perfectly cast. So I'm looking forward to that. And then the second Entertainment Weekly article was just a mention of Matthew Lillard, who many of you will know from Scream and from Scooby-Doo. And the reason being a part of the Buffy podcast here and the Angel podcast here, Matthew Lillard's really good friends with Sarah Michelle Gellar, and he's going to be a main part of season two, but they have not mentioned who he's going to be yet. And he always plays this interesting kind of character where he can be bad guy, but he can also be a good guy, which sort of fits the modality here. But the real reason why I wanted to mention that article is they this week started filming season two. And they believe that's going to be out at the early part of 2026. So
yeah, it seems like they're really dedicated to, getting more consistent with the show. I think mainly because it was originally drafted as a single 18 episode show, they kind of had the whole story already done. And it's obviously changed a little, but by splitting it in half and doing it consecutively, people aren't gonna have to wait. I mean, that's the biggest drawback to streaming by far.
Yeah. Is,
the fact that you have to wait so long between seasons.
Do you like how Disney does this one episode or, a little chunk at the beginning and then one episode at a time? More like traditional TV?
There's pros and cons. I love to binge.
Yeah.
But I also find it depressing because it's over so quick.
Yeah.
And I enjoy analyzing things, and so the weekly drop is much better for that.
Yes.
Because it makes you think about it, makes you, talk about it and anticipate and all that kind of stuff. So I like both aspects. I'm glad that we get a little bit of both. Like Netflix, you tend to get the whole thing. The fact that these, are weekly. We're watching Severance right now, and that's painful. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's painful. That's so painful. It's funny because
there's a lot to think about and talk about that after each episode. So having the weekly drop is perfect for that.
This is the first time that I haven't binged all of Daredevil season within a weekend, because those three Netflix seasons I watched over the span of a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as opposed to this one.
You mentioned the Buffy podcast. Did you see where Sarah Michelle Gellar said that she's working with, I can't remember the director's name who did, Eternals, Chloe Zhao.
Yeah. Yeah. Sarah Michelle Gellar has spent so much time since Buffy not staying away from it, she loves the universe, but the reboot for her was always the ideas that came her way were always bad. So for her to be involved in this lets me know that there's probably a pretty good idea behind it. So yeah I'm pretty excited about it. I loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and
me too.
Rest in peace, Michelle Trachtenberger, who recently passed away, unfortunately. Terrible. Pretty exciting. All right.
Some listener feedback.
Yeah. So listener feedback, Kirk, you're up.
All right. Matt King says, I've not seen much of the Netflix series, so only seen bits of Daredevil. And She-Hulk most recently, I think, and Kingpin and Echo. Exciting opening, a surprising early death for one of his mates, and it looks like it could be one of the better Marvel TV shows.
That's actually exciting to hear from somebody who didn't watch the original Netflix series. So I'm glad that people who haven't are finding some joy there. Rinaldi, who is one of our biggest Marvel followers, Podcastica. The explosive beginnings of episode one was an emotional backbreaking event for me. The most interesting thing is Daredevil and Kingpin attempting to solely operate as Matt Murdock and Wilson Fisk in these first two episodes. Also liked the Punisher Easter eggs. Rinaldi, so did we.
Yeah, so did we. Pink Allen wrote, I was not emotionally ready for that first episode, but overall, I am so stoked on this and to see where it goes. Daredevil is back, baby.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
For those of you who made it to now, please make sure you give us feedback on podcastica.com, and there's lots of other ways we'll get to in a second. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/podcastica. When a show's in season, we put up a post for each episode to get your feedback. You can also email or send a voicemail message at talk@podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out about 100 shows, but we have a lot of active shows going right now. Two that like strike me right out of the gate is Welcome to the White Lotus. White Lotus just kicked back into gear about a month ago.
Love that show.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I haven't started season three yet.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
I anything that Walton Goggins is in.
Amen. The ghoul. Oh,
so good. So good. Yeah. Jason and Randy and Jenny are hosting that as well as some guests there. We also have our Welcome to the Apocalypse podcast with Randy, which is one of the most unique podcasts that we have at Podcastica, where they're doing some improv stuff. And if you haven't listened to it, realize the whole show's improv and it is absolutely hilarious. So give those two a shot.
Check that one out.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And there's lots of guests. I've not guested on it, but there are lots of podcast hosts who have shown up out of the blue as characters on the show.
That's cool. All right, well, listen, thanks for listening, everybody. That's our show.
I'm not seeking penance for what I've done, Father. I'm asking forgiveness for what I'm about to do.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.